Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like wake up, brush teeth. Baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. This is, of course, the Gilcast. You also might be listening to this on the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Football feed. And we are recording this on Monday morning. We don't, of course, love to run these on Monday morning, but Sammy was being a dad. Nate had crap to do, so we're recording here on Monday morning. And Sammy, you were tilting all of yesterday, like you weren't going to make any money, but you had to have made money because you scored more points than me by 0.0 something, and I made money. So your tilt was for naught.
That is incorrect. I don't want to be results oriented. I did make money, yes, but I'm a fish. I'm just a stone fish, and I'm tilting because of my bad decisions. I feel like possibly I'm just bad at DFS. And my lineup is ass. Like there's no two ways about it.
Yeah, and Nate, you and I played the same team. I swapped at tight end for the late games because I thought that
I'm a fish.
you're a master of
Davis. Davis, no,
I'm very good with the swap I made.
Okay. It's not about the swap that you made. It's about whether or not you needed to swap. I don't know if you're just in chats with tournament people who like are looking at tournament lineups every time, but like in cash games to think that you needed to swap when you had Godwin left and Arnold left, which is, it's like, I don't understand what you're doing. Like it's like 2 p.m. David's like, David, Nate, we need to swap. And I'm like, I'm already winning head-to-heads, already above the double-up line. Who do you think is left in these later games that's going to smash us at ownership? Like, your swap was bad.
Let's go through the teams first, and then let's do it. So Nate and I both played Jalen Hurts, DeAndre Swift, Daryl Henderson Jr., and Cordarrelle Patterson. And then we played Chris Godwin, Michael Pittman Jr., T. Higgins. We both played the Bills defense, and we both played Dan Arnold at tight end. I ended up swapping from Dan Arnold in the massive $50 double up. Dan Arnold was owned 48%. Jonnu Smith was 0.5%.
There was a reason for that, by the way, Davis, just FYI.
Well, Arnold was, we'll get it into it a second. And then Sammy played, again, I don't think your team was that bad. You played Carson Wentz, DeAndre Swift, Daryl Henderson Jr., Chris Godwin, Cooper Kupp, Russell Gage, Dan Arnold, Cordarrelle Patterson, and the Washington football team. The mistake I think you probably made was playing Russell Gage instead of Van Jefferson when most of the projection systems had Van Jefferson as better. If I'm gonna side with you, if you locked all the cash game locks, so if you locked Swift, Henderson, Godwin, Arnold, and Patterson and the Washington football team defense on most optimizers, you actually did get the team that you played. You actually did get Russell Gage instead of Van Jefferson.
Yeah, and so what I ended up getting was a wide receiver 3 that got, count them, 0 goddamn targets.
It was really incredible.
Buddy, you cannot have it. You cannot play cash games in the year 2021 and have a receiver that gets 0 targets. And the thing that tilts me the hardest is that I had the lineup. I had T. T. Higgins and Elijah Mitchell instead of these two dusty Falcons. And I swapped because of the Calvin Ridley news, because I felt I didn't feel that comfortable with Elijah Mitchell because he catches like zero passes.
Man,
right?
The lineup that I guess I don't know what Nate had, but Sammy, the lineup that you and I had on Sunday morning when we woke up, if Ridley just plays and gets like 15, is literally the stone cold nuts. Like
literally the stones. And I played two Falcons. The Falcons, like, didn't I learn my lesson? Week one, I got my bungus got smashed because the Falcons are so insanely bad. And it's like, wasn't I like paying attention? Of course. So I play these two Falcons. They're awful. We got lucky with Cordarrelle Patterson because he's just Mike Davis's backup. Yeah. He got a touchdown, but like we ran good with Cordarrelle Patterson.
The team, let's just so people know, and so we'll talk about the Sunday morning stuff, but the team that we had, I assume this is what you had. This is what I had on Sunday morning, which was Jalen Hurts, Elijah Mitchell, Daryl Henderson, Michael Pittman, T. Higgins, Cooper Kupp, Dan Arnold, Chris Godwin, and the Washington football team.
That was the team that had Kupp
that I just said.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't think I had Hurts.
I didn't have Elijah Mitchell. I had Hurts.
That was the team I had.
I had Hurts, Washington football team. I must have had Chuba over Hubbard, or Chuba over Mitchell, because I don't think I built a build with Mitchell.
Oh yeah.
Sammy,
Mitchell's not a Nate guy.
Yeah. No, Elijah Mitchell's not a Nate guy. But dude, the Russell Gage thing. Oh, that was. I woke up this morning and I thought I had a data problem.
I thought I had a data problem this week
because it looks like Russell Gage didn't play. I can't find a target. I can't find an area. It's like he didn't play. And I'm like, he's in Sammy's lineup. He must have.
Stone ghost. I mean, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I played with eight players in my DFS lineup.
So this was the first. So a couple things. One, this Sunday morning was the first time we've really had a scramble all year. We had the week one semi scramble when
the Trey Sermon thing
when he was inactive.
Zach Moss.
So that was like a semi scramble. When we ended up playing Raheem Mostert, Sammy and I played Raheem Mostert, I think, if I remember. But the combination of Calvin Ridley being out and Jamal Williams being out basically meant that two things happened. One, Calvin Ridley, who was a cash lock, you can't play a guy who's not playing. So that threw the wide receiver position in flux. And then Jamal Williams being out gave DeAndre Swift had a 94% snap share in the first half for the Lions. However, after telling you guys last week, this is exactly what I was worried about with DeAndre Swift. Jamar Jefferson got his fourth quarter touchdown this week, which is
the second I saw Davis's lineup. The second I saw Davis's lineup finally getting on DeAndre Swift, I knew I should have gotten off. Like that was my, if I made one bad mistake this week, it was that I should have gotten off immediately. As soon as Davis was on him, it was time to jump. I mean, yeah, the DeAndre Swift thing was still a thing, but it was like, I think those three running backs were pretty much not, I didn't have to consider too much.
I had Swift before the Jamal Williams news.
Yeah.
That's how good of a play I thought Swift was.
Well, I just hate playing DeAndre Swift, especially like, I mean, I think with Jamal Williams out, it was fine, but at this elevated salary, like he changed what you had to do with your lineup a little bit. I guess we should talk about Patterson, who Sammy was somehow tilting Patterson the entire day, but he led the team in targets. He scored the touchdown. Like, why were you tilting Patterson?
He didn't lead the team in targets. Davis got more targets than him.
Oh, I forgot. Mike Davis did get two targets on their final drive. That is correct.
So that would be why Davis Maddock, because he's literally a timeshare back on the Atlanta Falcons that we paid 6.2 for. Now, don't get me wrong. He was a good play. He was fine. Like, the thing that attracted, I think, all of us to him as opposed to Elijah Mitchell is that, you know, Mike Davis got four empty carries the last time they played. It looked like Patterson was really overtaking that role because he's clearly way better. Mike Davis is just a complete dust ball.
Patterson, by the way, did run more routes than Mike Davis.
Yeah, I'm sure he did, but like he got the same number of carries, right? He only got 9 carries and 5 targets. Like that's fine, but like 6.2 for that's not what we bargained for, right?
Well, also we were not bargaining for Matt Ryan basically having his worst game of the season. I mean,
we should have been. Because Matt Ryan,
the Panthers are not good, dude.
Dude, Matt Ryan is a tumbleweed, bro. It's over. Yeah, he's like Ben Roethlisberger, Southwest, Southeast, wherever the hell Atlanta is, wherever my.
I mean, it is crazy. It is crazy that Matt Ryan went 20 for 27, 146 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions, and took 3 sacks. Like and Kyle Pitts, who I think I played up. I'll have to pull up my tournament teams, which were. It's going to be really sad when we get to the tournament part.
What was the quote, Nate? That Davis said, if you don't play Kyle Pitts, you're not going to make it.
You're just going to lose.
You're just not going to make it. This Atlanta Falcons team. Oh yeah. The CPAT thing we got lucky with.
My
Davis, I actually do think the CPAT thing we got lucky with. Mike Davis did run a touchdown. Yes. Mike Davis did run more routes. He only had like playing a 6.2K guy on a bad offense. Who's going to see 5 targets and 9 rushing attempts is like, that's a way to lose money in DFS long term.
Yes,
we got lucky this week.
Let's be fully transparent about the expectations coming in. Patterson was coming off back-to-back games of 14 rushes, 9 targets, and 5 targets. He has scored. He has scored touchdowns in. You know, he leads the Atlanta Falcons in touchdowns. Mike Davis was coming off of his lowest snap share and his lowest touch share of the year. Like, let's be very calm, rationally. Level-headed, like let's not just tilt. The usage of Mike Davis and Cordarrelle Patterson being used equally was more of a surprise than like we would have not been surprised to see like a 70-30 here. The 50-50 was actually the surprise given the usage trends.
It was, and just as you playing DeAndre Swift should have been a sign that
Nate playing CPAT should have been the sign that it was total dust.
Right.
That's right. It's true. We should have thought about that. I mean, really, I'm looking at our lineups, and the thing that we did that ended up being bad was just assuming that the Falcons would be competitive or perform well on offense, because that just, you know, that's like a coin flip any given week, and they sucked. I mean, they had 146 passing yards and they had 82 rushing yards. They had like 230 yards total as a team.
Egregious. And I played 2 of them, not 1, but 2 in American cash games. I'm like, this is why I'm tilting. Like, regardless of the result, yeah, I got there. That's great. But like, I think the process is just unforgivable playing Russell Gage. Unforgivable.
Well, and this is why, if I'm going to bully you a little bit, the reason why your process is bad is just because you mentally were weak and just said, I have to play Cooper Kupp, even if the teams are not as good with him. That's really, at the end of the day, the issues of your lineup came down to the fact that Cooper Kupp was a fine play, but probably not an optimal play in DraftKings cash.
All right, Nate, I'm going to let you chime in, but let me retort real fast. Maybe it was mentally weak. Maybe it was, but sometimes, Davis, you have to understand this game is a little bit
more of an art.
It's more of an art. And Cooper Kupp is that man. Sometimes a guy just busts the projections every week. He's above median. He's just hyper efficient. You expect it to regress. It doesn't regress. He's just the goddamn man. And that's Cooper Kupp. And may I say that my lineup was just fine before I put these dusty ass Falcons in. I just have Elijah Mitchell and T. Higgins. It's a complete print fest.
Don't even get me started on the T. Higgins 3 yards short.
The T. Higgins. Well, T. Higgins also, we got lucky with like a catch that was not a catch. If they would have ruled it, or if they would have reviewed it, we would have lost like 10 points.
Yeah.
The 54 yarder.
Yeah. So here's the thing about Cooper Kupp. So I actually, like, I'll be totally honest, Sammy, it's a little more of a field game sometimes. And I think you just missed it on this one. So like I built my optimal was legit Cooper Kupp and Van Jefferson.
So the Daily Roto optimal had both of them as well.
But with
Carson Wentz,
there is no way that they are going to continue to be able to pass the ball at this rate. Like I cannot have 3 Rams in this lineup at Cooper and then have Cooper Kupp at 9K. Like I cannot have this much exposure to a team that literally could be up 28-0 at half.
Can I tell you why?
You know what I did? I did a hard exclude on Cooper Kupp for every lineup I spit out for the rest of the day. And I said, I am taking a stance. I am going to, it's sometimes it's more of a field game, Sammy. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you, Nate, your whole thesis of, oh, I'm afraid the Rams are going to be up 24-0 at halftime. Buddy, they were.
By the way, they could have been up like legitimately 40-0 at halftime. They had two fourth downs in the red zone where Stafford threw the ball into the end zone and the ball got knocked away. But like they could have been up. Like it could
but
have
those
been
those were going to be Darrell points. Those are going to be Henderson points. Like Henderson should have been 35 in this.
Buddy, I know Cooper Kupp caught a touchdown, but he was also extremely close to two others. Like you guys ran.
He got down to the one, and Stafford missed him when he was open on the other. So, yeah. I'm gonna display my fish brain off to everyone, which I don't do. I don't do all that often. So I did the same thing Nate did, where I ended up excluding Cooper Kupp when I was running stuff because our optimal was. Had Wentz, Pittman, Cooper Kupp, and Van Jefferson as like the way to fit all the running backs in. So I went and looked at Cooper Kupp's game logs, right? I literally went to DraftKings and looked at his game logs, and I saw the week one game against Chicago where he got the 100-yard bonus and he scored a touchdown and he hit his projection of this week, right? Because we had him projected for like 26. And in week one, that's exactly what he did against Chicago. And I was like, you know what? If Cooper Kupp gets 100 and a touchdown, I'm actually okay. The problem is if he gets another 50 yards and another touchdown and he didn't get the other 50 yards and the touchdown, because that's really what it is. The games where Cooper Kupp gets the second touchdown is when he buries you, but the 101 at 9,000 does not bury you. So that's where I decided to not do it.
Can we flip over? So now that I've taken my L, because I deserve it, man. Can we talk about y'all's mental weakness? I know that you ran really, really, really bad with Jalen Hurts. I know you did. Like, he got scavenged by a bunch of dusty-ass running backs.
He didn't get scavenged once. He didn't get scavenged, twice. He got scavenged four times by Boston Scott and Jordan Howard.
All within the five-yard line.
Sammy, there should have been a 30-point delta between our teams. Literally, you should have gotten smashed in this 3-minute. Like, there was so many opportunities for Hurts that I'm just like, I was
and for it. And for T. And by the way, Pittman, I know the two touchdowns obviously were insanely lucky, but
he
Pittman,
literally didn't do anything for like three quarters.
Not getting the 100-yard bonus is like shock. I think he got let's see, how many times did he get targeted? Like a really absurd amount.
Like 15.
And by the way, that back-breaking interception that Wentz threw in overtime into triple coverage, you know who he was targeting? Michael Pittman Jr.
So Pittman got a target for that.
Yeah,
he left 15 targets.
Let's call it 14.
Yeah, I think he had like 150 air yards too. He like led the league in expected points.
Pittman was
a stud, and you faded.
Yeah,
he was a really good play. But you guys, the thing that I did that I think was mentally strong is not pay up at quarterback. I was kind of mad that I've been.
No, you're. I actually think that Wentz was a better play in a vacuum because all the, you know, so Daily Roto had Wentz and the Blitz had Darnold as the cheap quarterback play, but the cheap quarterbacks were in all the optimals, right? Like every site had, you know, whether it was Matt Ryan, whether it was Sam Darnold, whether it was Wentz, like a lot of the sites had the cheap quarterback as the right way to build. And we kind of all were like, dude, Jalen Hurts is just going to get there against the Lions. And he got, I said in our chat, Jalen Hurts is kind of like Lamar, but without a football brain. Like Jalen Hurts is just out there playing, you know, backyard football, and Lamar is processing things on a higher level. And I said that after he'd been scavenged once. I didn't think it was going to happen three more times.
Yeah. You definitely ran bad. Hurts was a really good play, but I just think the construction of the slate, like you can pay down for Carson Wentz. And you can get Cooper Kupp. And if you just don't bone it and put two Falcons in your cash lineup and stick with what you had,
I think the mentally weak thing was spending that much of your salary on Cooper Kupp and feeling that he was that much better of a play than Chris Godwin, Michael Pittman, and these other guys. I mean, there was so much
Chris Godwin.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, I think for me, actually, I think the mistake was not spending more at quarterback. When I look back, I think spending $3,100 on the Bills instead of just jamming in the Washington defense and figuring out
$3,300.
So you know,
yeah,
you know,
whatever. What I should have done is the 2v2 of getting up to Josh Allen. Down at Washington defense instead of up on
it.
Bills.
I didn't see it until after.
A couple people flipped that team on me, and I'm like, why am I spending $3,300 on a freaking defense?
It was really bad.
It's not quite as bad as the $3,500 you spent on the Cleveland defense, if you need that name. But I don't know why you guys are flipping over these 3.3K teams.
That's why I was so shocked Davis was on my team, because I thought for sure Davis, when I rolled out the teams and I said, guys, I'm getting weird. I'm paying up a defense.
That was like the blend. So the team that you posted was like the blended optimal team when you combine DR, ETR, and the blitz. That was why I had the same team.
Got it. I did not think you were going to pay up a defense, and I was like, Davis and Sammy are going to
rip me.
Well, just
because I felt that T and Pittman were locks, and I didn't
think their
floor was
so high.
I just didn't think that spending that, because the other thing people did was they played Keenan Allen over T. And so the 2v2 was Washington football defense, Keenan Allen over T in the Bills defense. And I was
Keenan Allen actually scored a touchdown. That was wild.
But I thought that T was straight up like a better play than Keenan Allen.
He is
was.
So good at football. And I'm like tilting my face off of how bad he yesterday
well,
was.
Well, we're gonna keep playing him because he's gonna keep not getting there. So his salary is gonna remain low. All right, I'll take my medicine. So this was my thought on the swap. Right. I mean, one of the things is I love playing for the sweep. And this is something Sammy knows, but Nate would never do this. But if Jonnu Smith goes 4 for 40 and catches a touchdown, he beats Dan Arnold. Dan Arnold was not only the only tight end over 10% owned in the massive $50 double up, he was the third highest owned player overall. Dan Arnold was. And basically my thought was, am I really like what are the odds that Dan Arnold outscores Jonnu? Probably like 3 to 1. Like he's probably like what? Like minus 250, minus 300, something like that. That's like a 75% probability.
So you just thought you were getting pot odds. You were getting laid 100 to 1.
Well, I was getting laid a good price, right? Because I just said that, but also, so I'm looking at the massive $50 double up. I have Jalen Hurts with the snowflake at 43%. I have DeAndre Swift with the snowflake at 57%, T at 35% with a 13. There are lots of guys in the late games who can beat him and who can make that a bad score. What I was really hoping for was for T to get the bonus on that last drive, and then I was going to swap back. If T had gotten the bonus, I was going
to
swap
buddy,
back.
T had like two or three drives to get the bonus, and he just never got one.
I know. I literally had my phone up. With my cash lineup, I saved the swap and then I put Dan Arnold in and I was watching the Bengals game. And if T caught a pass, I was going to hit save to move Darnold back in. Darnold, Sam.
What a sweat.
Yeah, Dan Arnold. Jesus. And he didn't get it. And so it gets to 3:05 Central Time and I just leave it. And Jonnu ran a ton of routes. He did not get a ton of targets.
Yeah, because he's their number two tight end.
So if I can get my hand in the dirt, the last game, the game where Jonnu got banged up, he had 5 targets and a carry all in the first quarter. So I was like, okay, well, I mean, clearly the problem with the Patriots offense is they have no explosive players, right? They have no one who's fast. They have like Jonnu is the only guy who you would say is like, oh, that guy's like an athlete. But really it comes down to my team was borderline anyways. The other thing was I did not feel like Dan Arnold getting 10 and Jonnu literally getting 0 would bury me, which is like basically what happened and was correct. But the Jonnu outscoring Dan Arnold equity was huge because of the snowflakes and because of how owned he was.
I just think you overestimate where you need to be at in cash games.
That's probably
and I think even the fact that you said, I don't think a 10-point delta would bury me means that you realize that you're not sitting as bad as you thought you were. Like when you look through cash lineups and ownerships, there weren't a lot of guys in those late games. The one thing that I think you could have been fearful of is the Keenan T T, if you thought Keenan was just going to smash T, and that everybody
It's not about Keenan himself smashing T. So really the optimal way for me to have done this would have been to go through all the individual head-to-heads, right?
Yeah.
And people who have Hurts and Swift both, I leave it. People who don't have Swift, people who don't have Hurts, I swap it. But because it was so borderline with waiting for T to get the bonus, I just didn't have time. Like I would not have had the time to do
so,
that.
So what you also do is you underestimate how stupid people are in
yeah,
general.
That's actually probably my biggest, I'm not even kidding when I say that's probably my biggest leak.
It's a big leak. It's a big leak. You're talking to a bunch of sharp people, you know, you're like, you know, in Discords and this and that, and you don't realize how dumb the average person is. So when you flip over Chris Godwin in the late games, yeah, he's 52% owned. That means half of people did not play Chris Godwin. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
so I want to look at sort by highest ownership in the massive $50 double up. So Daryl Henderson was 64%. We all had him. DeAndre Swift was 57%. Godwin was 54%. The Washington football team basically matching the Bills also kind of played into that, 'cause I knew they were coming in the late game. So I knew I was basically, you know, immediately when the late game start, I knew I was basically losing 5 points, which is what ended up happening. And then, you know, Dan Arnold was 48, Pittman was 46, Jalen Hurts was 43. So the only late game guys to sweat, honestly, and this is actually probably what saved some of my teams, was James Robinson was 20% owned and he got hurt.
Really?
Which was surprising. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. James Robinson was like the third highest owned running back in most things I saw. Yeah. It was nuts. I did not consider him at all. Whoa. And then there was a lot of other ownership on like tertiary wide receivers. Like I think Emmanuel Sanders almost had 20% ownership in some things. Yeah.
And I did. No wonder we made money.
Russell Gage had 15%.
If I had realized that Sanders was that high owned, I would have not done this swap. So that's actually, I'm actually going to say it. I should have done the swap in my head to heads regardless, but it was a bad global swap. It was a bad global swap.
Yeah. Maybe I play more double ups and stuff like that, but in double ups, I just don't think, I think you overanalyze the leverage you need.
I play more head to heads. I post, you know, 200 head. I post like 200 head to heads and I accept all the, like, I have way more in head to head than in.
Yeah. And it's hard to go through all those individual head to heads. Like, do you consider like the time it would take to do it? Would you actually sit down and say, 20 minutes?
So what I do in the, like what we had a, there was a late swap I did, I think 3 weeks ago, where I swapped in all my head to heads, $20 and above. Because I knew I'd have the time to do it. So that was like, you know, 12 games or whatever.
Yeah.
And I swapped, and it was like a swap to Robert Woods in the late afternoon games. One of the last couple weeks, and it ended up working. But you know, obviously like you're swapping to lower EV guys. So it doesn't work all the time.
Yeah. I think it's a panic move, bro. Like you're just not as far behind as you think. Like I really honestly,
and it was all like, I just was tilting Hurts so bad. Like Swift is whatever, 'cause I knew he was so owned. But Hurts losing to every quarterback that people played was like so annoying. Like losing by 7 to Wentz, like it was really tilting. Like,
yeah, it was part of tough, it is just a human. This is part of the issue when you pay up at quarterback and DST. It's like, yes, you have other good value
defense,
plays.
The defense was basically us saying that we liked T more than every other wide receiver. That's really what it was.
Yeah, what it really was I was looking at it and I was like, if I was paying down a defense, it was to get up to Cooper Kupp, and it wasn't enough to get up to Kupp without sacrificing the floor of one of those three wide receivers. And I just think too often people roll out these wide receivers in cash that are like, I mean, these guys have a floor of zero that we've seen. And I think too often people are comfortable taking that at this. And I just think a zero in your cash lineup, just, I mean,
it's not good. Tell you what it does. It's not good.
Yeah, Davis, I just think ultimately you have a bias, partially because you're interacting with tournament players during the day. And I think that too many people are talking about those swaps where I do think it's equitable, and partially just because humans naturally, we want to be in control and do something to make outcomes better. And it's hard for us to just let things ride.
It's a mentally weak swap.
Well, yeah. It was a mentally weak swap. I think that we'd all agree in general, late swap is underutilized, and having late options.
Yeah, that's like my biggest thing is that people like we talked about this like 3 weeks ago when I did do that late swap. I wish I could remember what it is. Too many.
You've done so many, it's kind of hard to like go back and compartmentalize.
I mean, because I do. I think more often than not, people are not, I just like my base rate would be people are not swapping enough. But look, we all got there. I mean, we were all above the cash line in the massive $50 double up. I won enough of my head to heads to be profitable. It wasn't a huge week. It was like 30% ROI or something like that, because holy fucking shit, my tournament teams were so bad, dude. Like just, oh my God. I played Kyle Pitts on every team. My stacks were Matt Ryan double stack with a double bring back. Remember when you wanted to play Robbie Anderson in cash for like half a second and he also got zero?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that tournament team that we entered. Robbie Anderson.
So I will go. My main team in the big red zone was a Tom Brady double stack with Chris Godwin and Tyler Johnson. Pretty good, right? Wrong. DeAndre Swift with 9, Cordarrelle Patterson with 18, Jalen Waddle with 6.9, Devonta Smith with 2.5, Kyle Pitts with 3.3. Not even close.
Did you finish last?
This team.
Did you lowball?
This team scored 120 points.
Your team scored three figures. That's impossible. That math doesn't track.
Brady got 31 and Godwin got 31.
All right.
That was it. I mean, it's one of the worst teams that I have ever made. And I did the same dipshit thing I did last week by playing the expensive defense, or not the expensive defense, the chalk defense. I just was being a huge dipshit here because I just had to get Kyle Pitts in. Pitts and Waddle and Devonta Smith. I both really liked because another one of my tournament teams was a Tua and Waddle with 2 Bills wide receivers, and that game actually played out in a way that would have been profitable for fantasy had anyone scored any touchdowns. I mean, Tua threw 39 times, Josh Allen threw 42 times, 13 targets for Beasley. Emmanuel Sanders only got 4 targets, but 2 of them were deep balls. So that strategy I was fine with it. Like the Dolphins angle that I took, I actually think was fine. It just didn't pay off. But all my one-off plays were terrible, right? Like they were just bad.
I think Pitts, I know Pitts sucked, but I think Pitts was a really good
and he was only 17 to 20-ish percent. And it, like his odds of being the highest scoring tight end on this slate, I felt were like people were still playing higher than that. People were still playing Dan Arnold. People were jamming Dan Arnold in these tournaments. And I was like, dude, if Pitts gets 22 and Dan Arnold gets 4, I just am going to be like crushing these people. But my teams were bad. There's just no excuse. They were terrible.
Yeah, I had actually decent results this week in tournaments, but I don't know if I played optimally. I try to break down the week from like a macro perspective every time instead of just like building lineups. And so I kind of had 2 game stacks of Tennessee and Indiana were like the 2 teams that I want, or Tennessee, Indiana game. And then the Denver, Washington game was the 2, and then Tampa Bay and New Orleans were kind of the 3 like game stacks that I wanted. And then I wanted a bunch of like small stacks of Buffalo, like, and not, no bring backs, but ultimately what I ended up with in single entry was Wentz, Taylor, Mixon, Debo, AJ Brown, T Higgins, Jack Doyle, Zach Moss, and the Falcons for 164. So love results
the,
were our,
love the AJ Brown. Love the AJ well, Brown.
Yeah. He when was, I did he a, was my most owned receiver in tournaments, and he was well, just like such a good play.
Yeah, I did a hard exclude on Cooper Kupp. So my 2 most owned wide receivers were Debo and AJ Brown, which made most of my lineups like have a shot. So but I think construction wise, I made a mistake in that I faded Pittman because in the stack he was the highest owned on Indiana, and I said I want to get
you couldn't win without Pittman. So
and yeah, so I think the Jack Doyle thing was a mistake. I just in my
head. No, no.
When I build tournament stacks, I'm trying to go a 2-1. And I think, well, a tight end, most volatile, you know, they fall into a touchdown. If Doyle gets two of the touchdowns and Pittman doesn't, then I'm way up on the field on a game that I want exposure to. And I thought that's a way to get exposure to a chalky game without having too much actual ownership overlap. So I don't know if that's sharp or not. I'm still debating.
I mean, you need to be focused on like cumulative ownership and like ownership pairings. Like Pittman might have been really chalky, but I don't actually think AJ Brown, Wentz, and Pittman and Doyle all combined would have been like, you know, that's like something like 2% of teams or something.
Yeah. If, well, I also had Taylor. So it would have been a Taylor to Jonathan Taylor to Michael Pittman. But yeah, AJ Brown was like 20% owning and stuff. I mean, he was owned.
Yeah, he was owned. Yeah, no, I don't think seems fine. You know, yeah. I don't know. The thing with that is like, it's like the Godwin thing. Like sometimes if you're doing the game stack, you just got to pick the guy who projects the best. Cause at the end, like you still need the raw points.
Yeah. You still need the points. Sammy, what'd you do?
The one I put in this red zone, I did a Bills double stack with no bring back for Miami. So
I think that's terrible because the whole thesis behind the Bills thing is that the other, like it's specifically with this game, it was that the Dolphins were going to throw 45 times, which they did. And Tua throws all those short passes.
Yeah. I mean,
which are huge for,
I don't know. I think no bring back is okay when you have like the second lowest team total on the slate.
I think it's like with the specifically the Texans and the Lions, I'm like fine doing no bring backs on those teams because they're so egregious. But like the Dolphins can like get first downs and move the ball. So that's my opinion.
I'm sure I didn't feel like I was losing a whole lot not having Jalen Waddle or whatever. Look,
Waddle sucked, but Parker got there. Is that what happened?
Yeah, did Parker do something?
Yeah, he had 8 for 85 on 11 targets. Okay. I mean, Jalen Waddle was targeted 12 times. Like he had a huge volume game, but just didn't. Tua completed 21 passes. Like he's completed like 70% of his passes on the year, so he was way below expectation.
Yeah, I mean the guy just throws like a 3.5 yard A dot all the time. Like cool. I double stacked Josh Allen with Stephon Diggs and Tommy Sweeney. And amazing.
I actually want to commend you on that play. Like I legitimately, I'm not even kidding. I do think that Tommy Sweeney was like a good play with Josh Allen because of how bad tight end was and how many people were playing Dan Arnold. Like the Dan Arnold tournament ownership was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a man you want to play in tournaments. Like
Tommy Sweeney played 82% of the snaps. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I triple stacked there with no bring back. And then I played a Joe Mixon and Bengals running back and DST correlation. I did play the chalky Daryl Henderson in this lineup. I played Michael Pittman in this lineup. Robbie Anderson was in this lineup. He got a stone zero burger, but did recover an onside kick at the end of the game. So I feel like he should accrue some fantasy points for that. And then I played Jamal Agnew at 4%.
I had Jamal Agnew on a team before I decided to play on that Brady team before I decided to play Tyler Johnson.
Tyler Johnson was a good play. I had him in some Brady stacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he's got talent. He's got somewhat of a role. And like he totally dusted last week. So I didn't think many people were going to play him. So I like Tyler.
Yeah, when you run that many routes with Tom Brady as your quarterback, like you can stumble into a huge game just by being out there. So
yeah,
I don't think that's a bad play at all.
Anyway, this team put up 151 and change at min cashed. And if Robbie Anderson wasn't a complete dust ball, like, you know, it could have been a little bit better. So it was one of the fewer teams that I didn't have AJ Brown on. Nate, I didn't play any Cooper Kupp in tournaments. I might have had one like Stafford stack, but even the Ram stacks that I did a lot of him in trees, a lot of him in Higby double stacks, things like that.
You gotta wake up to 90% snap share Van Jefferson, dude.
I played some Van Jefferson too. Like Ain't no problem with Van.
Van Jefferson was about 8 yards away from being a slate breaker. He had like an 80-yard touchdown that turned into a 75-yard down.
Yeah, I don't know how he didn't get into the end zone there. Who's behind
Stafford everybody? Underthrew him just a hair is why it happened.
Yeah. So I guess two questions for you guys. What was Robbie owned in that? He looked way more owned than I was expecting.
Good question. I just backed the page. Robbie Anderson was 7.7.
Got it. Well, okay. So second question, I guess, I want to ask about my strategy with the Cup fade. So obviously Cup projects really, really well. I mean, Cup projected really well for me. His ceiling was great again. I feel like with a player that high, like of a salary, you almost have to play like above or below the field significantly, or you're just not getting leverage at all one way or the other, because he was going to be owned 30%. And I was like, I can either just match the field. And then I feel like those lineups are just dust and I'm throwing away leverage, or I want to be 0% or 100%. And so is that wise, or should you have some players that you just let exposure be what it be with projection?
You should take this one, Davis, because I think you and Blender have had some really good conversations about like optimal ownership on the take cast that I think are really like, he's got some really sharp thoughts about like GTO versus exploitative ownership, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, it's really dependent on the contest you're playing. Like, you know, I've just like, was not ever particularly that good at it. So, and the contest pools are so high that I have just stopped MMEing on DraftKings for NFL. Like if I was still doing like maxing out the $2 mini max or whatever, I think matching the field on Cup is probably better than going with straight up zero. But I'm making like five single entry three max teams, and then just entering them into a bunch of contests. And with that, I am more comfortable with your perspective of going all in or all out. Like I went all in on Kyle Pitts because I was like, he's the best play at this position. And when he hits, my lineups have so much leverage on the field because everyone's playing these, you know, everyone's playing Dan Arnold and Tommy Sweeney.
And I think it's a price tag thing too. I think if you're looking at a Michael Pittman, you can match that at 5.7 and be okay because you don't need to have leverage on the highest. Where if a 9K wide receiver like Cup goes for 40,
well, it's also a range of outcomes thing too. Like we just like Pittman getting 30 was literally probably like his 98th percentile outcome or whatever. Whereas Cooper Kupp getting 35 is like his 75th percentile outcome. So like full fading a guy who can literally get 50 is a different conversation than, oh, I faded, you know, 7,100 DeAndre Swift who gets 10 sometimes. Like Cooper Kupp literally probably gets 10, like 5% of the time or something. Yeah. Cause you still need the raw points. Right. And some like fading a guy who can be the highest scorer on the slate is always going to be a little bit fraught, but you know, the fact that he's 9,000, it's like, we don't even think, which it's a sad conversation to have now, but like, we haven't even talked about the fact that we haven't been playing Derrick Henry for weeks. Like, I don't think any of us.
Yeah, we kind of blew it last week that we didn't. None of us played Henry in cash, and people did, and that's something we didn't really like talk about, the decision not to do that.
Well, in tournaments too. I mean, no, we haven't been playing Henry at all. And you know that leverage.
We're also probably not going to be playing Derrick Henry moving forward. It appears tough.
Let's take a look at this since we're doing this on Monday morning, we can do this. Let's take a look at the salaries for next week. If they're,
how much is Russell Gage?
It's a good question. So next week, Dallas is still not on the slate.
Slate next week is ass.
Yeah.
It's complete ass.
So we still have Josh Allen. We have a questionable Kyler Murray. Mahomes and the Chiefs are back. They're playing the Packers. We get Lamar back. Oh no, Dallas is on the slate next week. I lied. Dallas is home to Denver. So that is pretty interesting because Zeke is 7,000. I can already tell you one guy who's gonna be in my cash game lineup next week. Amari Cooper is 5,700.
Heavens.
What's Michael Carter? What's Michael Carter at?
Oh, dude, that is something we thank you for bringing that up. The Jets are not on the main slate. I don't know if they're on bye or on one of the off slates, but Michael Carter was in our all of our top optimals because we adjusted our target share relative to what happened the week before, which was 48% of Mike White's passes went to the running backs. He basically did the same thing this week. Michael Carter got targeted 14 times. He had 9 for 95 as a receiver. And I, of course, I'm just sitting looking at our optimals like, I'm not fucking playing Michael Carter, no way. But I mean, Michael Carter is like dime store DeAndre Swift, basically, in terms of how he gets there.
Yeah, he had 14 freaking targets.
Sammy, I mean, do you want to tell the people what you did in our Superflex league that we co-own together?
No, I don't.
Sammy, I had the foresight to pick up Mike White in the Superflex league that Sammy and I do together. And Sammy logged in Sunday morning, looked at our team where I had inserted Mike White into our Superflex position, and Sammy subbed out Mike White for Brandon Bolden. Brandon Bolden, 32-year-old New England Patriots special teamer. Brandon Bolden played 32 snaps, ran 4 times, was not targeted once.
Well, it's a small equity swing. Nothing to see here. Next week, also Calvin Ridley 6.2.
He's not playing.
Well, he's out for undetermined amount of time.
Oh wait,
oh my God, Mike Davis is 4,700, Nate.
Oh dude, I'm going back to the Mike Davis well.
I gotta say, Mike Davis might actually be playable for 4,700.
This is I think 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I said, DK, give me him at 4,700 and I'm back.
Nate.
Well, I guess it depends on the Ridley thing. If Ridley is in, I'm maybe less interested, but with Ridley out, I do think they're going to need to rely on him, Patterson and Pitts to do stuff like,
Sorry. I'm just now seeing the notes on Calvin Ridley. I was out for Halloween yesterday, so like I wasn't really paying attention. But
yeah, he's taking a step away from professional football.
We don't know how long it could be. It could be short.
So here's an interesting one. The Dolphins are home to the Houston Texans. It's the immovable force meets the very stoppable object. The Dolphins, this terrible offense, plays against the Houston Texans. Tua is 5.8. Jalen Waddle's 5.6. Devontae Parker is 5.3. Also, Will Fuller is 3.8 and is eligible to come off of the designated for return IR next week.
Oh, my God. Just can somebody Photoshop Adam Levitan's face on the guy doing coke and just like snorting it all in? I mean, that's definitely.
I probably won't play Fuller in cash, but I guarantee he'll be on at least one of my tournament teams.
Yeah, I'll bet Tua will show up in optimals.
Yeah. The Tua Fuller stack will be spread throughout my teams for sure.
All right. Minnesota Baltimore.
I think McCaffrey's back next week too.
He's down at 8K
flat. Oh, dude.
Wow. This may be a thing. This really might be a thing.
Imagine him coming back and being in a 50-50 timeshare with Amir Abdullah. I got so tilted, by the way, because I played Hubbard on one of my tournament teams on FanDuel, and I was watching that game, and the announcer said, "Oh yeah, Matt Rhule told us yesterday when we were meeting with him, Amir Abdullah is going to have a huge role." He said expect to see a lot of Amir Abdullah. Where was that report, dude? Where was the Amir Abdullah RotoWire report? Not a thing. Nothing. And Amir Abdullah got 8 carries and 5 targets, dude.
And he got his 5 targets on like 12 routes or something. It was like every time he was out there, they wanted to get him the ball. It was weird. What is McNichols at?
Oh,
because
not on the main slate.
Not on the slate.
I was gonna say because I think Evans,
he's back.
Evans is dust.
Yeah, Evans was. Oh, R.I.P. to the best ball teams. But McNichols could be in play for us moving forward then too, or we get like some weird trade if they start taking those dusty Baltimore guys.
Dalvin Cook is down at 7,700 after kind of dusting it off against the Cowboys yesterday. Two targets, no receptions, 18 carries for Dalvin Cook.
Remember when we used to like just stack the Vikings every week in the first 4 weeks, and now they're
Cowboys are the best team in the NFL. How do we feel about that fact? I mean,
we all saw your tweet this morning, Davis.
They won a game that like in years past, the Cooper Rush, like Ben DiNucci game, they lose that game 100% of the time. Like Kellen Moore, dude. What a goat. Do you see that wishbone formation they ran with the two extra offensive linemen? Incredible stuff.
Pretty slick. Yeah.
How are you feeling about your Pittsburgh Steelers, bud?
We just go into Cleveland, you know, whoop Cleveland. I mean, you know, they're a sleeper.
I'm worried Baker Mayfield's shoulders, like he's just going to get up and his shoulders, just like his arms are going to fall off his body.
I mean, I'm just worried Baker Mayfield isn't the man. Travis Kelce's only 7K next week.
I wonder if we're going to get two tight end teams as optimals next week.
We really might, because Pitts, so Waller is 6.2, Pitts is 5.9.
I don't want to play anyone against New Orleans, dude. New Orleans is They just suffocate people. Like, I know Godwin had the huge game, but Brady was all out of sorts all game.
Yeah, you got to be worried about Marshawn Lattimore.
Is that the guy? That's the guy who supposedly is really good against Mike Evans, right?
Yeah, that's the guy who crushes.
He scored a touchdown, right?
Of course, yeah, because he wasn't worried about Lattimore.
Yeah, someone dead ass said that to me this week when I was talking about Brady double stacks, and I was like, dude, like
aren't you worried?
I couldn't pick Marshawn Lattimore out of a lineup of cornerbacks, even if they were all in their jerseys with their uniforms on. I'd be like, I don't know, he's one of those guys.
Got to play more IDP, bro.
Yeah,
Dan Arnold up to 3.4, tough.
Yeah, who is next week's unfadeable punt? Oh my God, imagine if Waller is not good to go after. I know he is going to be, but imagine 3K Foster Moreau against the Giants.
I don't know, man. I didn't like 2.5K Foster Moreau, so why would I? Why would I pay up?
Yeah. All right, let's get out of here, everyone. Sorry we were late. We'll be back next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.